Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. Go check out reallifepharmacology.com. I've got a free PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great study guide, great refresher, whether you're in practice or a student. I put together on the top 200 drugs some of my most important clinical pearls that'll come up in practice, as well as a lot of things that are going to show up on board exams throughout your career. So go check that out. Simply an email will get you access to that nice resource for free. So go take advantage of that for sure. The drug of the day today is indapamide. Brand name of this medication is Lozol. At least that's the brand name I have heard used most often. It is an older drug, so it has been a long, long time since I've heard the brand name Lozol uttered from anybody. This is a thiazide-like diuretic. So you can put it in the same category, mechanism of action, adverse effects, or at least pretty similar to chlorthalidone and hydrochlorothiazide. Mechanistically, being a thiazide or thiazide-like diuretic, ultimately it causes sodium chloride and water excretion, and the area of the nephron that happens is the proximal segment of the distal tubule. So that's where this drug works, is in the nephron. And with that sodium chloride water excretion, potassium will also go with it, which is really, really important monitoring parameter, as I'll get into the adverse effects here in a little bit. So why don't we see this medication used as much as, say, hydrochlorothiazide? My best guess from reading and an experience, hydrochlorothiazide comes in so many different combinations that is helpful, obviously, where patients can take one pill and potentially get two medications. Indapamide comes in a few, but I think that's probably the biggest reason. Second other possible big reason is provider experience. People have been taught to use hydrochlorothiazide. It's just commonly used, so people get used to it, the dosing and all that sort of stuff. So that's probably the other reason, because there is a potential advantage of indapamide over hydrochlorothiazide, in that indapamide does have a little bit better evidence as far as cardiovascular risk reduction, so better evidence as far as studies go. And there may be a slightly or a significantly greater reduction in blood pressure as well compared to hydrochlorothiazide. So take that for what it's worth, you know, why hydrochlorothiazide might be used a little bit more versus indapamide. But indapamide, there certainly is a story to tell there as to why maybe we should use it a little bit more instead of hydrochlorothiazide. Dosing of indapamide, 1.25 to 2.5 milligrams daily is going to be your typical dosing for hypertension. It is a diuretic, so we can use it for fluid loss. I have maybe seen it a few times for fluid loss. Most often I've seen it for hypertension. Edema, fluid loss. You're going to likely add on this drug to a loop diuretic. You're going to push the dose of the loop diuretic first and foremost. And then if we need a little further fluid loss, we might push that dose a little higher than the standard hypertension dose. So dosing for edema in that 2.5 to 5 milligram daily range. But again, you're going to likely optimize that loop diuretic first. Now, let's get into adverse effects a little bit. If you add on indapamide to a loop diuretic like furosemide, you're definitely going to have to watch that potassium closely, because it can definitely cause a profound drop in that potassium level down below the normal limit, which is usually considered 3.5 milliequivalents per liter. Again, that's dose dependent, so the higher the dose, the more and more likely you are to eliminate fluid as well as electrolytes. So in addition to that hypokalemia, we can drop magnesium levels, and we can drop sodium levels as well. And not to mention with the fluid loss, we can increase the risk for dehydration and acute renal failure. A couple things that may actually increase on account of using indapamide. So uric acid can go up, so pay attention to that in our gout patients. I've seen it more often with hydrochlorothiazide just because hydrochlorothiazide is used more commonly, but indapamide can cause that same issue. So pay attention if you see allopurinol added or increased for gout management or gout flare medications like NSAIDs and corticosteroids. A drug like indapamide could potentially worsen that situation or have caused that situation. And then it can increase calcium levels in the blood as well. So that's something to pay attention to. There is an off-label use of indapamide that's associated with that, and that's calcium nephrolithiasis. Not something that I don't believe I have ever seen used in practice. It is an off-label use, but I did want to mention it as it was reported in the literature there. Administration with or without food, not too big a deal either way. If it caused some GI upset, certainly we can do that. That GI upset is part of the adverse effect profile, usually going to be dose dependent. Again, nothing dramatic, you know, like GLP-1s or metformin. GI upset isn't incredibly common, but of course, I did want to mention it briefly, even though it's a low percentage. Other adverse effects, obviously it's going to drop blood pressure, frequent urination, sexual dysfunction. So with blood pressure management, some of the most common meds are calcium channel blockers, ACE inhibitors, beta blockers, and thiazide diuretics. Thiazide diuretics and beta blockers tend to cause more sexual dysfunction than ACE inhibitors and calcium channel blockers. So definitely something to pay attention to. If you see drugs like sildenafil being added, for example, I always go back through that medication list and make sure I don't see medications like indapamide or antidepressants or other medications that might worsen sexual dysfunction. Sun sensitivity has been reported, so pay attention to that, particularly in the summer or in areas where certainly they get a lot more sunlight throughout the year. There is a sulfa group associated with the chemical structure. So if a patient has a very severe allergy to a sulfa drug, that might be something to pay a little bit of attention to. And then half-life, it does have a little bit longer half-life than hydrochlorothiazide. Half-life's in the ballpark of 14 to 25 hours, which correlates nicely with our once-daily dosing, which is pretty standard. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're checking out pharmacist board certification study material, go to meded101.com/store, STORE. We've got a growing list of resources. We've added every single year content to those packages. BCPS, ambulatory care, NAPLEX, BCGP, and BCMTMS. So go support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. If you're a nurse, PA, nurse practitioner, med student, physician, and you want to support this podcast, meded101.com/store has other resources as well. We've got a guide to nursing pharmacology, food-drug interactions, common drug interactions in primary care, Perils of Polypharmacy, lots of different books on Amazon that you can definitely help support this podcast with too. So again, all those links, meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, wrapping up with drug interactions. So first thing I think about, blood pressure lowering effect, that's probably what we're using it for. But keep in mind, if we add on drugs that you may not classically categorize as antihypertensives, like phosphodiesterase 5 inhibitors, some of the Parkinson's medications can cause hypotension, they can certainly add to that effect. And on the flip side, blood pressure raising medications, I pay attention to those. So stimulants, NSAIDs, things of that nature. Potassium lowering drugs, obviously any diuretic, loop diuretic used in combination, we got to pay attention to those electrolytes, potassium, magnesium, and that can have kind of that additive effect where it gives you an extra reduction in that potassium when we use it with other medications like that. I did want to mention corticosteroids are associated with hypokalemia, so that could have an additive effect on top of indapamide's effects there. And then gout medications, so if you see allopurinol being used, indapamide or adding that to a patient's regimen could potentially counteract some of the uric acid lowering effects that we're trying to get from allopurinol. Calcium, so if you recall, indapamide causes hypercalcemia, so medication supplements that increase calcium levels could have an additive effect. So certainly calcium supplements, vitamin D supplements, those can both increase calcium levels as well as indapamide. Now in clinical practice, I haven't seen this come up real often, but I have seen it a couple of times. One other thing with hypokalemia and low magnesium levels, when you have those reduced levels of those electrolytes, patients are more likely to be at risk for digoxin toxicity. So again, that's why we monitor electrolytes. But if you've got a patient who's, you know, taking diuretics in heart failure, for example, there is a possibility they may be on digoxin as well. And digoxin toxicity risk can increase with dropping of potassium and magnesium. So definitely an important point to remember. I've definitely seen that come up on board exams as well throughout my career, as well as pharmacology exams. So take that for what it's worth there. All right, well, that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, found it helpful, leave us a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Share us with classmates, colleagues, anybody who could benefit from pharmacology education. If you want to track me down, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP on LinkedIn is probably the best place to connect with me. And then, of course, you can email me at mededucation101@gmail.com. As always, please take the time to support the sponsor if you're able, meded101.com/store. I greatly appreciate all the support. And of course, feel free to drop me an email and shoot me a message if you have any suggestions or comments for the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your day.